Hey, welcome in. Big series this weekend here in Fayetteville, Arkansas, number 6. Mississippi State comes in ranked number 3. Got Bubba Carpenter here in studio with me. We're joined by Mark Etheridge from D1Baseball.com. He covers the SEC, does a great job, has forever. I want to tell you real quick, today's baseball podcast brought to you by H&R Tire and Auto. They're a third-generation family-owned business serving Northwest Arkansas since 1976. Just like great baseball programs, H&R is built on consistency, trust, and doing things the right way. No shortcuts and no gimmicks at H&R Tire and Auto. Mark, you've seen Mississippi State in person this year. How good is this team?
I really like this team. They are deep positionally. They've got a lot of righty-lefty matchups they can do. They've got older players. They've also got some really talented newcomers. Just lots of options. Speed, power. They don't strike out a ton. And then on the mound, the rotation has been really good. I know Arkansas's got a nice rotation, but Mississippi State's is right up there with it. I really like Valinkas on Saturday, the lefty transfer from Virginia, and Ryan McPherson. His stuff is incredible. He'll go Friday, and then Duke Stone has been kind of a find. He's a guy who didn't pitch a whole lot last year and has really come on for them. Moved into the rotation, I believe it was last week, and I mean it's. They have been super impressive so far. And the other thing I would mention about Mississippi State is that they have avoided the upset that so many of the SEC teams and really across the nation that we've seen, the top teams in the country. Everybody stumbles. But Mississippi State, their only losses are at top-ranked UCLA and on the road at seventh-ranked Southern Miss. So that's pretty impressive how consistent they've been.
You look at Brian O'Connor going there from Virginia. It just that felt like a very, I don't know, almost like a kind of a seismic moment whenever they hired him. It's like you got this program that has won a national championship very recently, and we know that Mississippi State expects to be really good. And then you got this coach who, you know, he's only a decade or so removed from winning a national championship himself. Virginia always really good, top of the ACC, College World Series contender. It seems on the surface like this is a really good match between these two.
Yeah, it is. It does seem like a really nice marriage. And with Virginia, they had been able to keep O'Connor for years because certainly Mississippi State's not the first program to try to turn his head. And he always stayed. He always said no. And it just got to a point, I believe, where Mississippi State is such a storied program with a lot of advantages from resources, a great ballpark, big fan base. There are a lot of reasons to be excited about Mississippi State. And let me tell you, with O'Connor coming in, that just ratcheted up. There's more excitement. There's more resources coming into it. And it's really played together nicely that they have this great team. They brought in they had a strong nucleus, brought in great transfers, have really exciting freshmen. They've just got so much positive energy around that program right now, and he's a big part of it.
You know, I was looking at something the other day for Arkansas. They're just kind of doing a comparison between last year's team and this year's team. And when I look at Mississippi State's stats this year, it reminds me a lot of what I saw from Arkansas this time a year ago. Arkansas's batting average wasn't as good as Mississippi State's is right now last year at this time. And I don't know that Mississippi State's pitching is as good at this time as Arkansas's was last year. But you know, the power numbers are similar. OPS is similar. They got a lot of guys that are batting, you know, kind of 350 and higher like Arkansas did this time a year ago. Is that a comparison that you can make between those teams?
Maybe. I mean, with Ace Reese, they do have a superstar. Now, he's not off to as quick a start, perhaps, as some of the other top bats in the league, like Brendan Lawson at Florida is just off to a great start. Caden Sorrell at A&M, again, just off to – but Reese is in that category, and his numbers aren't – certainly from a power standpoint, aren't there yet, but it could be because he's really that kind of hitter. And I do think that it starts with him. If you're going to face Mississippi State, you're going to have to deal with Ace Reese. But the guys that have really stepped up around him, Reed Stallman was kind of a bit player last year, hit for power, but didn't play a ton. And he's really come on and having a great year. Noah Sullivan is one of the, you know, he's an older guy, has been around a long time, been a two-way player for much of his career. He's really just hitting this year. And those are two guys that really give lineup protection to Reese. And as a result, I mean, it's, if you're going to go through the heart of that lineup, you better buckle up, because those guys, they take professional at-bats, they file off pitches, and they really make you work.
Bubba?
Well, I was going to ask, how much stock do you put in a lot of the upsets? It seems like there's been more upsets in the SEC this year. I want to say there's been 47 losses, I think, SEC play so far. Do you put much stock in that, Mark, early in the year like this?
Well, I think that last year the expectations became so high. The SEC in the regular season was the best it has ever been. And that did not carry over to the postseason. But I do think that because that bar was set so high, now anytime one of the SEC teams lose, it's news. Okay. And I think that that's an impossible, you know, standard to meet. However, I do feel like some of the roster volatility causes teams to maybe gel a little slower than perhaps in years past, when you really had guys who were in the program playing together, you know, 2 and 3 years. I do think, especially early in the year, that can lead to some growing pains while you're trying to figure out who you have and what role, and all the, you know, the internal dynamics of a team as they learn each other. I think that's just the world we're in right now, because of the portal, because of, you know, NIL bringing guys up levels, and also your mid-majors, they're going out and they're plucking players from the lower divisions, right? And guys that we never would have even seen from D2, D3 are coming up and actually showing that these guys can play too. They may not be as tall, they may not run as fast, but they're skilled. And I think because of that, if you're the favorite and you don't throw strikes that night, or you kick the ball around, or you just take some bad ABs because your head's not in it, you're vulnerable. And I think that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, I think we've seen that too with some of these teams that have beaten Arkansas. Like Bubba and I have talked about, you know, Stetson, you look at their roster, they got a lot of guys from Florida, Alabama. You know, they had a pitcher from Alabama who came in and shut Arkansas down the other day. Arkansas State's got some former SEC guys. It's it's hard to, I think, for a lot of fans, Mark, to kind of separate their long-term thoughts about teams, and especially in midweek games, and maybe look at, you know, not what, so like Arkansas State has been, but what Arkansas State is right now, and that it's a very capable team. And I think, you know, you'd probably say the same thing about some of these teams that have beaten Vanderbilt and LSU. It's college baseball is a lot different than what it was 10 or 15 years ago.
I think the top of the mid-major is closer to the top of the sport than it was in past years. And it's just flattened. And I do feel like baseball is the ultimate surprise game where, you know, the favorite team doesn't always win. And I do feel like that's what we're seeing. I mean, UCLA is losing. Nobody's going to ever question how good that roster is. It's amazing. And they're dropping midweek games and having close games. So yeah. I just think that is where we are, which also speaks to Mississippi State's been able to avoid it, which is certainly, I guess, exemplifies what an older team, even if they're new, what these guys who've been in the battle before and they understand what's going on.
I don't know how much of an upset Tulane over Mississippi State would have been, but Tulane had Mississippi State on the ropes the other night. It was 7-2 in the seventh inning, and then all of a sudden, you know, here comes that Bulldog offense. It felt like that game kind of, it kind of exemplified how, like, powerful their lineup can be, where, you know, they scored, what, 9 runs in 2 or 3 innings and kind of made that game not very close at all at the end.
Yeah, they can definitely wreck your pitcher psyche, because it's one of those kind of guy, one of those lineups that just continues to thump. And, you know, there are lineups around the league that you can pitch to. Okay. You can pitch around certain guys, and then you get to a certain part of the order and you can really make hay. Mississippi State's not one of those, no matter who they put out there, 1 through 9, because they've really got about 12 or 13 that can really do damage. And that makes them dangerous because they can mix and match based on who you've got on the mound that day.
Okay, so you mentioned Ace Reese, and he's the guy that I think a lot of people know from Mississippi State because mm-hmm. he was newcomer of the year last year, was an All-American. Like, who are the other hitters that are, capable for them? I mean, I see the numbers right here, but I wonder, in your mind, who are the most dangerous? And the second part to that, Mark, is that I think there's been so much focus on who O'Connor brought in that I look at a lot of these guys, and they're actually people who were in the Mississippi State program last year.
Yeah, some of them are, right? A guy like Bryce Chance, veteran player, not the most toolsy, but he's not the guy you want to see with two outs in the ninth inning and then a runner on second. He's just that kind of cat, right? I think another one I would highlight would be a new player like Ryder Woodson. He's their shortstop, really toolsy, rangy, kind of tall, rangy shortstop, big arm. But he has been a exit velo phenom. Everything he hits is, 100-plus miles per hour off the bat. And all of them don't fall in. His numbers don't look all that great, but he is just mashing the ball. And if they do, he had a big game against UCLA in that classic that they played. I think the other – we mentioned Stallman. We mentioned Sullivan. James Nunley has been an interesting guy. The other one I can't forget this guy. Jacob Parker is a freshman. He is going to be a star. He's kind of sharing time in the outfield with Nunley right now, but he's one of these top freshmen that used to didn't get to college, and he's there. His brother JoJo was a first-round pick and did sign. Jacob Parker looks like as he develops, I don't know how they're going to keep him out of the lineup, but certainly as we head into next year, he's going to be one of the names that everybody knows.
Mark, couple of questions. So far early on, who's been the biggest surprise for you so far early in the year?
Biggest surprise? I think how good Southern Miss has been. I felt like they would be good, but I didn't think that they would go out and beat Oregon State, win three straight Tuesdays against SEC teams. They beat Alabama, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss. They're number seven in the nation, and they're only moving up. Veteran team. I feel like that's somebody who's better. Inside the league, I'm really fascinated with Missouri. They were so bad last year. I mean, it was almost embarrassing how bad they were. I'm just non-competitive often. And this year, granted, the schedule has not been great, but they're winning those games that they lost last year. And you may have seen this weekend, they were down 12-1 and came back and won a 13-12 game, right? And then that was against Illinois Chicago, and they held the Flames scoreless the rest of the series. So they've kind of got a mojo going on, and yeah, big bad Auburn's coming in, and Auburn's really good. So all of this feel-good story might end this weekend, or at least take a dip. But I am kind of emboldened that they're better than they were, which, that's good for everybody, right? You don't want a laugher series, and it feels like they're going to be more competitive.
That kind of leads me to my second question is, who's your sleeper, like in the league, in the conference this year that's kind of flying under the radar, or someone that you might be, you think might at the end of the year be that team that's standing?
I don't know. It's hard to find a sleeper when everybody's ranked.
Good point.
But Texas was my College World Series champion in the preseason. That's who I picked, and they're off to a great start. They hadn't lost. They're definitely not a sleeper, though. I feel like Oklahoma is better than I expected. I didn't know because they lost their entire rotation. Skip brought in a bunch of guys, and you didn't know exactly who was going to emerge in the rotation. And Oklahoma looks, they did great in Arlington, opening weekend. I feel like they're off to a great start, and they've got A&M, and I really don't know how to handicap that one this weekend. That definitely looks like one of the most evenly matched series of the weekend.
Yeah, I think a lot of people look at the SEC right now, Mark, and they feel like the league has kind of turned on its ear a little bit, where you've got you know, again, nobody's got bad records, but you got Vanderbilt at 11-7. You got LSU with 5 losses, Arkansas with 5 losses, Tennessee. I think they've got a couple of head scratchers in there too. Is it a byproduct of who teams have played, or maybe more importantly, who they haven't played? Why you see the records what they are right now?
Maybe in some cases, certainly the schedules are much different. LSU, they've been really fascinating for me because 1 week they look like the best team in the country offensively, and then the next week they don't hit, but they really pitch well, and you think, oh well, they're gonna put this together, and then the next week they don't do either, and they end up having a 1-4 week, and there's no questioning the talent, and if you're going to trust anybody, you trust Jay Johnson to figure this out. Mm-hmm. But they've been really puzzling, and it's going to be interesting because they're going to Vanderbilt, who's also kind of in a bit of a funk. Mm-hmm. Vanderbilt is second in the conference in homers, which is definitely a new skill for Vandy to have based on the last few years. But they're just not scoring runs in bunches, right? If they homer, they score. If they don't homer, they don't score. And that's going to be – it's kind of two teams that really need wins, and one of them is going to get it, you know, rain permitting, is going to get a big series win. And that, to me, is a really toss-up series because it's in Nashville. And Vandy with Connor Fennell on the mound against Cason Evans, that's a really good Friday night matchup, two of the stars of the sport. So that'll be a fun one to dig into Friday night.
We're this far into it. I'm surprised. I'm just now asking you, what do you think about Arkansas? Like they're 12 and they're 12-5. People here are a little worried about the offense. Worried about some of the non-conference losses. What do you see?
Well, the offense, basically, the top half of the lineup is great, right? It's just getting something out of the bottom half, and specifically the left side of the infield. Mm-hmm. That to me is what's got to be figured out. I love the rotation. I love the high end capabilities of, you know, Gackle and Dietz. I mean, if those guys are rolling, Arkansas is going to be in every game, right? As long as they pitch anywhere near their potential. And Fisher has been one of the better stories. I mean, certainly the velo jump that he's apparently had, he was always had good command, it makes him a really good Sunday guy, right? So I love the rotation. I think there's enough weapons behind them in the pen. The question, you know, like other than last year's, is one that we've had on Arkansas for a few years now. Are they going to hit enough to compete at the highest levels where this program wants to be?
You know, I think about last year in Texas. I mean, they won the SEC without a very good offense. They were you know, very pitching defense heavy. You can win that way. It might not be the prettiest way to win, but it is a way you can win. You look at Arkansas's pitching numbers. It feels like there's a path there, that if they can find a little bit more consistency from their lineup, if their defense can improve a little bit, that there is a path there where they can at least – put themselves in position to win a lot of games.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think that if you had to pick one, I would rather have those arms because they can go out and shut down anybody. Where if you don't have the arms, you can get bludgeoned, right? Then you're trying to beat everybody 10-8, and that's just not sustainable.
Last one for you, Mark. Before we get you out of here, what do you think the key is to this Arkansas-Mississippi State series?
Definitely got to continue to get a deep start. I mean, you definitely want your starters to go 6, you know, at least get you into those middle innings. If you get roughed up and you're leaving after 2, that's a lot of innings to cover all that bullpen. Mm-hmm. And against this lineup, Mississippi State, as I mentioned before, they're unforgiving. They're going to drive up pitch counts. They're going to put up some crooked numbers if you give them free runners. So I think from Arkansas standpoint, that's the key. And then for Mississippi State, I mean, I think for them, the key is going to be being able to handle the road environment. This will be the first – I mean, they played Southern Miss on the road. This will really be the first test. And it's always interesting this first weekend when teams haven't played on the road yet, how they respond in the arena. Because a lot of these guys are new, or either they were on the team but didn't really have a big role. So I feel like those are two keys. And I picked Mississippi State to win it just because I think that they are right now playing as well as anybody in the country. And it's a team I have a lot of faith in. But it's not a series that was an easy choice because I do love those Arkansas arms, and they can go out there and really shut – they can shut anybody down. So should be a fun one. I'm kind of jealous that you guys are going to be there.
Well, Mississippi State, they got to play a little bit of history this weekend too. They haven't won a series in Fayetteville in 19 years. I don't know that it necessarily mean anything, but you know it has been a place where they've really struggled over the years. Mark Etheridge of D1Baseball.com. He does a great job covering the SEC. Mark, appreciate you being here.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks, Mark. Anytime.
All right.
Yep.
Hey, when it comes to game day, you want the best in your lineup. That includes your eggs. Eggland's Best delivers more of the nutrition you need. With 6 times more vitamin D, 25% less saturated fat than ordinary eggs, you can score now with Eggland's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. Eggland'sBest.com. We're also brought to you by Southern Loft. They believe that your home should reflect your unique personality. That's why they offer a wide variety of stylish furniture pieces that are perfect for any taste. Whether you're looking for a new sofa for the living room, a sleek dining table for the kitchen, they've got just what you need. When you're looking for that piece of furniture that reflects you, visit Southern Loft at 3155 North College Avenue in Fayetteville or call 479-856-6100. Dave Van Horn spoke this morning. He said they're going to keep the rotation the same. Gabe Gackel will go Friday, Hunter Dietz on Saturday, and Colin Fisher on Sunday. We talked about that on Tuesday, how we think there's a path to that being a successful route for Arkansas. Because, again, if Gackel can keep you competitive on Friday, then I would think you would put your number two and your number three against pretty much anybody else in the league. I don't know what else everybody else has, and I know that you know Mark mentioned Valinkis, who's pitched really well for Mississippi State on Saturday. He's a left-hander who came over from Virginia, but I don't know anybody who's – it would be hard to find anybody who's pitching better than Hunter Dietz right now.
I think so. I think that Saturday matchup is going to be a lot of fun to watch. But you look at Friday night, you got Gackel, and it's kind of like Gackel, Gibbler, that 1-2 punch is tough to beat right there. So if that's how it pans out, there's two pretty good arms right there. You can run out on a Friday night.
I thought it was interesting. Dave Van Horn said that in practice this week they've been working out some guys at different positions just to see, you know, what you might be able to do with the lineup. Ask him, you know, do you want to give any examples? He said no. So, you know, it might be a little bit of a surprise, you know, something that we see on the field this weekend. But, you know, it's a weird deal because you look at right field and DH. You got three guys there who – Cahillo Aloy, he's been in a little bit of a funk here for the last few games, but we know what his capability is.
Right.
He was an All-American last year as a DH. You got Zach Stewart, who's hitting well, or he was before the groin injury. We'll see, you know, what his availability is for the weekend. Carter Rutenbar had a really good 2-game series against Stetson. That's different pitching than what you're going to see against Mississippi State. And then obviously you shift over to shortstop, and we've talked ad nauseum about what's going on there with Pompey and Brumbaugh. So, you know, it's one of those deals. I think people forget that what you see opening day or what you see even 2-3 weeks into the season, that's not necessarily like all the tricks you have in the bag, so to speak. Like coaches are continuously tinkering with things in practice. And I think that whenever you get a week like this where you get a couple of practices, it's not always that way in college baseball, it does allow for some flexibility to look and see what else you might be able to do.
I think it's tough, Matt. Early on, you've got all these pieces, and you're trying to mix and match them to find out what works best. And there's a lot of talent on that roster, and it's just trying to get them in the right spot. And we've seen it through the years where, you know, someone that doesn't end up being a starter opening day, mm-hmm. you know, 3 weeks in is right in the mix, or maybe 4 weeks. You know, sometimes it takes a little longer, but yeah, you constantly see. I think you're constantly tweaking the lineup. Mm-hmm. There's a few years, you know, last year they kind of settled in on a lineup after a certain point, but I mean, there's a lot of years where you're still, you know, you're getting into conference play and you're still trying to figure out. Usually there's one or two positions you're still trying to figure out, and I'm really interested to see the shuffling that Dave's talking about. There's some options there. I mean, there's some guys you could put at shortstop. You can move some stuff around. So, and you know, but then it leaves a hole somewhere else that you have to fill in. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of curious to see what that is.
You know, the weird thing for Arkansas to me right now is how do you balance needing more runs with not sacrificing too much defensively? Because the pitching is the strength of this team. I mean, mm-hmm. You look at their numbers, their top 5-10 numbers in ERA and WHIP and opponent batting average, I think strikeouts per nine innings, strikeouts to walks, they're really good in a lot of these metrics that you use to gauge good pitching. You need a good defense to, you know, be behind that so that you're not sacrificing it, so that there's not that one or two run inning that's unearned and you look back in a one or a two run game and say, gosh, what if?
That's why Dave makes the big bucks right there, Matt. It's you look at it. You look at Cahill Aloy in right field. He's not going to make all the plays. Mm-hmm. But when Cahill's bat's going, he's going to drive in way more than he lets in. You look at shortstop. And what stood out to me is after the Stetson game, you know, Dave said, look, you recruit guys to come in mm-hmm. and play a position. You expect them to play it. I still see either Pompey or Brumball at some point being the shortstop. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what they were brought here to be, a shortstop. They're going to be a shortstop. Might take a little longer for them to get going. I still look at this team, and I talked about it Tuesday. I see a really talented lineup, and I see some talent on the bench, and it's just a matter of get them going. It might be a situation like a 22 team, Ole Miss team, you know, where they just kind of scuffled early on. They got off to a good start. They scuffled, and then they put it together at the end. But you had leaders on the team like Tim Elko. Mm-hmm. What was the catcher? Dunhurst, I think, was mm-hmm. the catcher. You had Bench at the top of the lineup. I look at a team like that, and we've got the leaders. You've got Kozel. You've got Helfrich. I really think cream rises to the top. We're going to get it figured out, and hopefully it's Friday night at 6 o'clock.
Defensively with Pompey at shortstop, what do you see right there?
I see a ton of ability. I really do. I see a guy that's got all the tools in the world. I worry, is he going to make the routine play? The great players make the routine play. Mm. You know, anyone's going to dive and make a play and get up and throw someone out. But I want the guy that's going to make the nine routine plays, not the one great play. And that's why I'm not sure about Pompey yet. I haven't seen him enough, I guess, at short to see if he's going to be consistent. Brumball was very consistent early on, and I'm like, and I love his footwork. He does everything fundamentally right. And so I thought that was going to be the guy, and it may still end up being the guy. It's hard to say.
Pompey had a play in Monday's game that I remember where the ball kind of just it felt like the ball kind of died on him, and it hit the dirt. Now, he was able to pick it up and get a force play at second, and mm-hmm. it didn't hurt him in that inning. Is that the routine play that you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, it's good hit. Good infielders create their own hop, and some guys just have a knack for it. Vahiva Aloy. Mm-hmm. You notice he never got a bad hop because he put his body in the right spot. He was so good at reading the ball. And I used mm-hmm. to talk about Derek Jeter all the time. You could watch Derek Jeter take ground balls all day. He never got a bad hop. Well, he moved his feet. He read the ball off the bat so well, he was always in the right spot. That's what good infielders have a knack of doing. And early on, I saw Brumbaugh do that. And when he did get a bad hop, he was able to field it and make the play. But, boy, you got it. Your shortstop position is – I mean, for me, it's still – yeah, you don't want your shortstop going 0-for-4 with four punch outs. But at the same time, it's a defense position, defense first. You got to make those plays.
Knowing what you know about the lineup, and I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit, like if you were going to take somebody out of the position where they're playing right now and say you might be able to play elsewhere in the field, who are the candidates and what are the positions?
Well, you could take a Kozel and move him around. I don't think Sousa's arm's quite ready for shortstop. Mm-hmm. I don't think they want to push it at shortstop. I think eventually, yeah, he could, but I think Kozel's the guy you could move. You could even move him to shortstop. Is he going to get to every ball? Yeah, probably doesn't have the range of Pompey, but I feel like he's going to make the routine play. That's a tough one, man. What do you tell me?
It's kind of a weird one. I've seen, and I don't know what else you would do at first base, but I've seen Robinette play third. Mm-hmm. He's streaky at third, I think is the way I would put it. But he can make some plays at third base, too. Probably more than you would think for somebody his size and his build. I don't know that you want to move him out of first because he's so good and he's so rangy at, you know, picking those balls out of the dirt. But he's one. And I wonder about Rutenbar. Like where else can he play? They talk all the time about his athleticism and his competitive nature. He was a quarterback in high school and all this. I wonder, you know, they played him in right. Are there other positions where he might be able to factor in?
So I wanted to talk to him the other day at the batting cage. It's hard when these guys are they're in their rotation. I don't want to take up a guy's time. They're getting ready to hit. I was wondering if he ever played any third base, because my catchers are typically a catcher and they're a corner guy. They're either first or third baseman or a left fielder typically. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, you know, they said Rutenbar had played some left field, hadn't played much right.
Yeah.
But I wonder if he's moved in and played any third base. I don't see him as a first baseman. I think I love having Reese Robinette at first base. Think of all the runs he saves. Yeah. He's long. He's got long arms. There's a lot of balls that he catches that he stretches for and he keeps his foot on the bag where – let's just say if Koja was over there, Koja wouldn't be able to do it. A lot of balls up high. He picks real well. Boy, he's valuable over there because I think he saves a lot of errors for the rest of the defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be very interesting. After this press conference today with Van Horn, I'm interested to see, you know, are there any lineup surprises Friday or Saturday? And I did ask him, you know, kind of the same thing I asked you earlier, how do you balance offense and defense? And I think he said something to the extent of, you don't want to go crazy. You don't want to get carried away with it, mm-hmm. because you know, you don't want to, again, you don't want to cost yourself runs in the field.
Well, you can have one bat in the lineup that's not hitting well, let's just call it shortstop. But you got to have other guys pick him up. You can't have a two or three holes in the lineup, or your lineup starts to shorten and it makes you real easy to pitch to, you know. Mark Etheridge was talking about the length of Mississippi State's mm-hmm. lineup. They're top to bottom. There's really not a weak link in there. Looking at the box scores, who'd they have in the nine hole? They had a Bryce Chance in the nine hole, I want to say last Friday, and he's hit .422. So pretty good nine hole hitter.
Yeah.
Now I think they've been kind of nice shuffling luxury. Their line. I don't think they've had, you know, I don't think they've had the same lineup. It's kind of like Arkansas. They're kind of moving some guys around, mm-hmm. but I mean, they're getting production up and down the lineup. And that was what we got spoiled with last year. Look at Justin Thomas in nine hole, really good nine hole hitter. When we went to Omaha, I think he probably hit more balls hard than anybody in Omaha. And that's probably why he got that contributed to his draft. I think what he was able to do in Omaha, but I still think we're going to put it together. I do. I think it's early on. I told you last week or early this week, we can take all these stats and just throw them out. None of this that's happened before means a whole lot to me. The defensive blunders, yeah, they do. But the offensive stuff, throw it out. For me, the season starts Friday night, 6 o'clock.
And you look at the fielding percentage, I think it's .974. Right now it's .989 going into conference play last year. A lot of those are two players. It's Brumbaugh and it's Aloy in right field, and you wonder if they're going to be playing in the field. And I guess where I'm going with that is you wonder if the defense may be a little bit better than the numbers might suggest.
I think so. Look, I think two of the Brumbaugh errors – were throws. One was what I call a hustle play. It was a deflection off of Sousa. He picked mm-hmm. it up, threw off balance, and the ball got by Reese.
Where it's a single if he just picks the ball up.
Yeah.
It's an infield single, but it's because of the throw that you get the error.
Right. And the other one was a tough play coming in. He'll tell you he should have made the play. Tough play, charging it. Threw from underneath. Once again, pulled Reese off the bag a little bit. Those are tough errors. It's not like he's booting balls right at him. Now, he did have a routine play that he threw away. He bounced. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones you got to clean up. So, I to your point, I think the defense is way better. I'm used to seeing us top two in defense mm-hmm. when I look at the SEC stats. It's
5 years
seeing,
in a row.
Yeah, it's They've weird seeing two. Us down there. But it's early. So
5 years in a row they've been in the top two defensively in the SEC. And I don't think that it's any coincidence that they've been one of the well, they've been the winningest program in the SEC over that time because they played defense. I just think that it's an area that really gets overlooked. Texas was really good defensively last year. I mentioned it with Mark.
Yeah.
Like, I think there is a path for them to win games, a lot of games. But it's going to be – I think they're going to have to really – it's going to put some pressure on the pitching staff, I think, for a little bit until they can figure this thing out offensively. You got to have Gackle be really good. You got to have Dietz be really good. You need to have Fisher be good. Or, you know, at least have two of those guys good per weekend where you're not putting too much stress on your bullpen.
Right.
And, again, you got to be good behind them defensively. And then just hope that, you know, you can run into one of those 3-4-run innings that, you know, can be the difference in a low-scoring game.
I think the key is just to battle at the plate, find a way to get on base. I'm a money ball guy.
Yeah.
It's all about getting on base. And, you know, going back to Mississippi State, you look at their own base percentage, it's pretty good. It's .462 as a team. So they're getting on base. They don't strike out a ton. Yeah. They walk a lot. So they're up there. They're having competitive at-bats top to bottom. And for me, that's where it starts.
It really does remind me of Arkansas's team last year, yeah. Offensively. I mean,
yeah.
I was looking at Arkansas's numbers this time last year. Their batting average was not as good. It was .313, but you had a very top-heavy lineup where you had three players that were hitting over .400. The home runs, I think, were very comparable to what you have with Mississippi State right now. Arkansas's OPS last year, forever, it felt like, was over 1,000.
Yeah.
I remember whenever it finally dipped down underneath 1,000, it's like, okay, this is we're 30, 40 games, whatever, into the season, and it finally went underneath that threshold. You knew it was probably going to come. But, you know, you look at Mississippi State right now, and you mentioned the on-base percentage. Well, they got a lot of doubles. They got a lot of home runs. Their OPS is 1057 right now. That's an elite number. Now, again, it'll regulate. It'll come down some because they're going to play better competition, better pitching. But I see them, and I just see a really, really good-looking team, it feels like, and especially offensively.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's going to be a challenge for us this weekend. I think we'll have a better feel for how good we are, but I still – you know, they say good pitching beats good hitting.
Yeah.
I think it does unless that good hitting has a really good approach. You know, you can approach a guy the right way, and you can scratch out some runs if your approach is good. But, you know, I still like our staff. I like – for me, you know, I say it all the time, it's about getting 81 outs, mm-hmm. you know, or if you want to break it down even finer, you know, and I think this is the way Dave approaches it, 27 outs at a time. Let's go into Friday night, let's find a way. Gackle doesn't have to be great because we've got dudes behind him that could come in. Now, we don't want to deplete the bullpen on a Friday night, but we've got some really good dudes that can come in after him, whether it be McIlvain, whether it be Gibbler, whether it be Coyle. You know, whoever comes in, you know, there's a lot of outs in that bullpen. And so he doesn't have to be great, just be okay, and I think we'll be in good shape.
And that's where I go back to having good starting pitching behind him. I think it's got to be a comforting feeling. Now, if you have two starters who have a bad weekend, then you're probably a little bit in panic mode. But you know, let's say Gackle goes out and doesn't have a good Friday night start. Maybe he only goes less than three innings. And you have to use a lot of the bullpen behind him. Well, if your next guy can come out and he can throw 6 or 7, then you've kind of put yourself back on track, so to speak.
Right. And with Gackle, you know, he's not going to go out and strike out 12.
Nope.
But he's going to pitch this soft contact if he's got his stuff working. And the good thing about Gabe is, let's say his slider's not working, he'd go more to that breaking ball. I still love the changeup to lefties. That changeup that he throws around 88, 89, 90, it almost plays like a sinker, like a two-seam fastball. It's got a lot of depth on it and run arm side away from the lefties. I love that pitch. So, but the thing about Gabe, if he doesn't have one pitch working, he's got something else he can lean on, like we've seen guys in the past, like going way back, like a Blaine Knight. If he didn't have one pitch working, he could lean on something else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you want out of your Friday night guy.
Reminder that our baseball podcast is sponsored by H&R Tire and Auto. They're a local shop. They've been family-owned for 3 generations. They built their reputation on taking care of customers the right way. That kind of longevity doesn't happen by accident. H&R Tire and Auto. Arkansas needs to have a good SEC season, Bubba. I will say one thing that I think is a little bit worrisome right now, and it's early to be looking at these kind of metrics, but you can't ignore them. The RPI. It's not good for Arkansas right now. Yesterday, they were 101st. It's moved up now to 98th in the country. Usually, when you come into conference play, it's probably somewhere in the 20 to 40 range because you played some good teams, and they have played some good teams, but you played some teams that don't have good records at that point. And we've talked about some of these teams they played. Like, I think Xavier, once they get in their conference, they're probably going to win a lot of games, a lot more than what they've been winning. Arkansas State, by the way, their RPI right now is 71. It's incredible. Yeah. Like we talked about how much better they are. I was looking this up this morning. They're eighth right now in ERA. They are 79th in fielding, and they're 82nd in hitting. So it's not an elite team, but I think, you know, if you were to take like all three of those metrics and put them together and come up with kind of a cumulative ranking, I think Arkansas State would be a lot higher up than most people probably realize. And then we talked about Stetson. They're probably going to win a lot of games in their conference. They're the favorite to win their conference. But when you come into the SEC play with an RPI at 98, you're going to have to really make some hay in SEC play. I think you're going to need to have like a 17-18 plus win conference record to not have any more upsets in the midweek to have a good feeling about yourself being a regional host. Otherwise, you know, if you're looking at like a 500 SEC record with this kind of RPI coming into the conference season, you're probably going on the road for the regionals.
Well, still early. I look at all the upsets. You know, like I said to Mark, it's SEC, it's we're 214-47.
LSU's RPI, by the way, is 129th. So they're going through the same thing. They're having the same conversation right now.
I think it's crazy. If you look at the Sun Belt Conference, we're 5-6. The SEC's 5-6 against Sun Belt Conference so far early on.
I think Sun Belt is really good at baseball conference.
They really are.
He mentioned Southern Miss.
Think
about Southern Miss. Coastal Carolina was in the national championship series last year. Troy has a good program. Louisiana Lafayette has a good program. Arkansas State now. I may be missing somebody. Pardon me, but you know the Sun Belt. It's good baseball. It's not the Sun Belt that I think a lot of people. I think a lot of people get stuck in this. Hey, I remember college baseball being this way this many years ago, and it's never going to change my mind, even if the records and the analytics and whatever else show you something totally different.
But back to your point about the RPI, that thing can come up. Your RPI can change quick.
If you sweep Mississippi State, that thing's going to soar up the rankings this week. But Mississippi State's really good. I don't know how sweepable they are.
Well, I mean, look at Mizzou. They swept A&M last year.
They did.
That was like the most
You're never going to let that –
there's two things I'm never going to let go.
That series lives rent-free in your head,
it
right?
It really does. That's in my head. Phil Elson gets in my head. He's living rent-free. And then the 22 Ole Miss team just goes to show you anything can happen. What were they? Mm. They were 12-18, something like that in the conference, last team in. But they were a veteran team, so I don't know. I don't know. I guess I'm glass half full. Yeah, do I have Razorback goggles? Yes, but I need to see. I need to see a few. Once we start SEC play, I don't ever look back at anything that happened before SEC play. I really don't. And we'll just see. We'll see what happens. I think I wish we weren't opening up against Mississippi State because they're good.
Yeah.
But we're good too, but there's no holes there. We're going to have to play really good baseball. Our pitcher's going to have to do a good job. And we'll scratch out some runs. Their starter, McPherson. I mean, I've looked at some of his stuff and he looks really good. And their Saturday guy, Valencias. I mean, he's good.
Yeah, he's
they're both
good.
You know, they're all sophomore though. I don't know about their Sunday guy, Duke Stone. I couldn't find much information on him. I know he's a big dude. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's more of a sinker guy. I can't find a lot of information on him yet. But I mean, it's a pretty good rotation. But we just gotta find a way to scratch out some runs. And I still say we scored against our pitchers in the spring, early spring, when we didn't inside. No one hits inside. But when we went outside, we had some days where we hit some balls hard against our pitching staff. And if we can hit our pitching staff, we can hit their pitching staff.
I mean, I think it goes back to, like, the hitting numbers are not terrible. They're not what you want them to be, but they're not terrible. It's a 296 team batting average. It was 313 at this time last year, so 17-point difference. Now, the on-base percentage and the slugging percentage are quite a bit different from where it was last year. But I go back to, they got seven guys who you would consider everyday guys right now hitting 310 or better. It's just that hole at 8-9, it makes such a big difference. It's like you can have two on with nobody out, and then 8-9 come up, and now all of a sudden you haven't advanced the runners, and it's two on with two out. Or, you know, maybe you have a little bit of a rally, and then your eight-hole guy comes up and he strikes out, and that rally's over. And then your nine-hole guy, maybe he strikes out to start the next inning, and all of a sudden it just kind of, you know, now all of a sudden that pitcher's got a little bit more confidence than he did whenever there were two on and two out. And they've got to figure out a way to patch that hole at the bottom, so to speak. And you've mentioned this, Van Horn mentioned it again in his press conference today, that he likes how Souza's swinging the bat. You know, maybe he heats up and maybe that hole becomes, instead of two places in the order, maybe it becomes one place in the order. Or maybe Souza starts batting to the point that maybe you feel comfortable moving him up and not stacking him with whoever's at shortstop. There's a lot of options there. But they do have to. They've got to figure out something about that 8-9 spot in the order, because it's too gaping of a hole right now, or it has been.
Just remember though, when Souza got hurt last year, he was trending in the right direction. Yeah. He was hammering some balls. He was
Matt Hobbs
going.
Told me that he thought Souza and Helfrich were on the same trajectory at that point last year, and we saw how Helfrich finished.
Right,
Helfrich. I looked this up. He was batting .220. Going into conference play last year. Well, he ended up batting, I don't know what the final number was, but it was probably somewhere right around 300. I mean, he batted, I think, 333 over the last month of the season. And so if Souza was on that same trajectory, even if he doesn't have the same success that Helfrich had, you know, it's going to be a lot better number than what it ended up looking like.
I think so. And, you know, but then you still got to figure out the, you know, the nine hole, just the whole bottom of the lineup, but I feel good about Souza, and I still say, I think Pompey, Brumball, they hit our dudes. They're gonna figure it out. I think I feel bad for Pompey. I feel like it's tough. He's in a bad place mentally, and baseball's 90% mental. I know that's people wear that out, but hitting is 90% mental. Now every once in a while you'll have something mechanical creep in there that's causing you to do stuff. You see Aloy breaking down a little bit on his backside. You know, I'm one of those that says the knee and the knob works together. If the knee goes out, knob goes out. Puts him around the ball. That's why he's beating so many balls in the ground. He'll figure it out. Pompey, I think, is just, you know, right here. And once he gets his head right, I think he's gonna be okay. And we've seen Brumball rake. He's raked his whole life. Hitters hit. They're going to figure it out. But for me, it's defense first when it comes to those two guys.
I'm telling you, that umpire, that plate umpire, he did not do Pompey any favors on Monday by making him expand the strike zone with a pitch that's a ball off the plate and low in the zone.
It can get in your head. And it seems like when you're struggling, I remember last year when Souza was struggling, it seemed like he was 0-2 every at bat. And it wasn't like meatballs down the middle. It was like dude paints down and away, and then he hits the top of the zone. Or, you know, what it seemed like every time, like the pitcher just made good pitches and he was constantly 0-2. Or maybe he gets that 50-50 pitch, maybe just off the plate, umpire calls it a strike. It just seems like when it's – that's the crazy thing about baseball. Like the baseball gods don't shine down on you sometimes.
I feel like Arkansas's got three things that are potentially to its advantage this weekend. Number one is playing at home. I know they've got four home losses right now, but they haven't played in an environment yet like what they're going to see tomorrow night. I mean, weather's supposed to be good. It's a 6 o'clock game. SEC opener, number three team is in town. I mean, this is the Friday night environment that I think you want. I don't know how much basketball and the fact they're going to be playing kind of simultaneously in the SEC tournament affects the crowd. I think that there's enough people that want to go to baseball that that's not really going to be a factor. Maybe it is. We'll see. But it feels like that's the number one thing that they've got going for them is that, you know, Mississippi State, you heard Mark say it, haven't been in a road environment other than Southern Miss this year. This is going to be something new for them. And you know, I mean, I don't care if it's Missouri playing at home. Well, maybe not Missouri. If it's South Carolina, Alabama, any of those teams playing at home, like, it doesn't matter if they're not playing well. You still think that's going to be a tough series for the road team to go in and win.
I think so. And you look, all three of their starters are sophomores, I believe.
Starting pitchers.
Yeah, their starting pitchers are sophomores. Have they been tested in an environment like this? I mean, they pitched last year, so I'm sure they've been in some tough environments. But, you know, there's something about that bomb walker magic that can get in your head sometimes.
Well, the only games they played away from home, they played five games away from home. They played three games at Globe Life where they played Virginia Tech, Arizona State, and UCLA there. And so, you know, I mean, none of those are going to be very full in that ballpark. They went Tuesday night and played in Biloxi against Tulane. But that's kind of a Mississippi State home game, even though I think it was technically Tulane was the designated home team. And then that game in Hattiesburg against Southern Miss. That kind of goes into the second thing I was going to say that I think is an advantage for Arkansas is that's kind of a long bus ride from Biloxi back to Starkville. It's like close to 300 miles, about a four-hour bus ride. And so you've got that deal where, you know, they had the midweek travel, and then they're going to get on a plane, and they're going to travel. You got Arkansas, who they scheduled this kind of strategically where they played on Monday, they get an extra day of rest in there. I wonder how much that plays a factor on Friday.
I don't know. I mean, I'm one of those that says when the lights come on, yeah, think about the travel, how they got there, any of that. But
do you feel later in the weekend?
What's that?
Do you feel it later in the weekend if you're the road team?
I don't think so. But okay. I think it helps Arkansas having Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday off. I think that helps us. Gives us a chance to really get out there and get some practice in. Get your mind right. Have some good batting practice. Maybe some feel-good BP and get your head right before Friday.
It's different. Yeah, I know it's different whenever you're doing a midweek to a weekend turnaround. But I always feel like whenever you're playing back-to-back weekends on the road, that second weekend a lot of times does not go well. So that's why I wonder if that turnaround and the travel that they had in the midweek might affect Mississippi State. The third thing that I think is an advantage for Arkansas is the bullpen. Like the starters, you could put Mississippi State starters up against pretty much on any other three-man rotation. I think the bullpen is maybe where you see a little bit of a difference. Their main guys, they got some guys who've got really good numbers in the bullpen, but you know, they've got some guys they rely on, too, who, you know, you're looking at ERAs in the 4, 5, 6 range right now, and that feels different from what you're looking at, you know, those primary guys that you're bringing out, you know, especially on the weekend for Arkansas.
It goes back to something I say all the time. Good hitters are defined by what they don't swing at. I think tomorrow night it's important for us to lay off of certain pitches that McPherson throws. I mean, he's got some good stuff. He's going to try to get you to chase that slider. I think it's important we lay off that and get his pitch count up, and let's try to get into the bullpen as soon as possible. The earlier in the weekend we can get into the bullpen and get those guys used up, then the better off we'll be later on.
That's kind of been something we haven't seen a whole lot from Arkansas this year. They were really good last year at getting to the pitchers. Think about like Dygert of UT Arlington. They could never get that one, you know, kind of 30-pitch inning against him that would potentially make a difference once you get to the seventh inning. That is something that I feel like they've got to do a better job of.
You think about it. I've seen Nate Thompson call more offensive timeouts already this year, I think, than we did all of last year.
There's been a bunch.
And excuse me, I'm sorry if I'm wrong about that, but I don't remember. And the reason is because we've had two quick outs, like a first pitch line out and then maybe a second or third pitch ground out or whatever. And so we've got to call an offensive timeout to give our starter time to rest or our pitcher time to rest. Didn't see that last year. I don't even remember an offensive timeout. I'm sure we did it, but I don't remember it now. Guys like Jay Johnson, they do it nonstop. Tennessee, they wear them out.
Yeah.
But I don't see us do it a whole lot.
You don't like offensive timeouts.
You know what? I don't. I don't. I think there's a time. So back in the day, we didn't have offensive timeouts, but we were smart enough. You know, if the first two guys made quick outs, you go back to the dugout. Of course, you didn't have the pitch clock. Mm-hmm. You put a little extra pine tar on. You take your time getting up to the plate. You typically take a strike. and kind of slow the pace down on your own. You didn't need the offensive timeout. I guess now with the pitch clock, I guess you kind of have to. There's really not a lot of ways to slow it down unless you do what Tennessee does. They'll go get pine tar on their bat. They find a lot of ways to get around the pitch clock and the offensive timeout rule.
Remember, Arkansas did that last year against Vanderbilt. They had that Fennell, who's their Friday night starter now. He was wanting to throw a pitch like every 4 seconds, it felt like. And you would actually have the Arkansas guys kind of turn around and look at the pitch clock before, and they would wait till the last possible second to get alert to the pitcher.
Yeah.
So I guess there still are ways that you can do that, but not as many as there used to be.
Yeah, and then there's ways for pitchers to manipulate the pitch clock. That's hard to say. Manipulate the pitch clock. So pitchers can do it as well.
Yeah.
So it works both ways.
Hey, once again, our baseball podcast brought to you by H&R Tire and Auto, proudly family-owned since 1976. Trusted across Northwest Arkansas, committed to keeping you safe on the road all season long. You can learn more or schedule service at hnrtireandauto.com. Arkansas and Mississippi State. First 2 days this week, this weekend looks good weather-wise. Sunday, it's supposed to just plummet.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be a cold day Sunday. But as of right now, 6 o'clock on Friday, 1 o'clock on Saturday, 2 o'clock on Sunday are the starting times. You can read all of our baseball coverage at wholehogsports.com. You can hear Bubba with Phil Elson on the Razorback Sports Network this weekend. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. Looking ahead to whoever Arkansas is playing at the SEC basketball tournament. We'll learn that late tonight. Hope to see you then. Have a great day.